This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Not all American jobs are being sent to people in other countries. In some cases, we are importing people to do jobs here at home. The justification is that companies, unable to find people with the necessary skills, must bring people in to do those jobs. The federal government allows this using H-1B guest worker visas. Businesses in many sectors of the economy have made use of these visas, but particularly so in the information technology sector. And their use is on the rise. Last year, H-1B visa applications around the country rose 25%. In Charlotte, they increased by 39%. And the Charlotte Observer recently reported that millions of dollars of taxpayer-subsidized incentives in North Carolina have gone to companies employing foreign workers, which has sparked concern among some lawmakers. This hour, we look at the H-1B visa program and why it is deemed necessary, how it is used, and its impact on Charlotte, the nation, and on American workers. We're joined by Dion Roberts, banking reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
Dr. Bill Chu is back with us. He is professor of software and information systems at UNC Charlotte. Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
And joining us by phone is John Miano, co-author with Michelle Malkin of a book called Sold Out, How High-Tech Billionaires and Bipartisan Beltway Crap Weasels are screwing America's best and brightest workers. John Miano has also testified before both House and Senate committees on this issue many times in the past. Welcome to you, John.
Hi.
Hi. First of all, explain to people listening what H-1B visas are, when they came into use, and why. I'll begin with you, Dion.
So the program goes back to 1990 under the first Bush administration, and you know, the legislation that that basically created the visa was signed by President Bush at that time. And the whole point was to enable companies in the U.S. to bring in foreign workers who had, skills that presumably Americans did not have, for highly skilled occupations like, you know, computer scientists and engineers. So that's the genesis of the program. So, I mean, it's been around since 1990, basically.
I have to ask, this is America. This is the United States. We claim to be number one in everything. People come here from around the world to get educated by our colleges and universities. Why would there be a shortage of any talent in the United States of America? Dr. Cho, this is particularly critical, I'm told, in your business,
right,
in information technology. Why would there be a shortage of people with those skills?
Well, because the United States is number one in innovation and creativity, so we create new things. And when you create a new thing, you know, people need to be caught up and trained.
Well, that's my next question. If we're creating the new thing, why don't we have people who know how to work it? Why do we have to go to someplace else that hasn't created the new thing where they know how to do it?
Well, the creation process is started with an elite small group of people. And then once you try to mass produce and try to roll it out, you need lots of people to do the work. So it's never a smooth pipeline, you know.
Information technology is the sector that most people talk about when they talk about bringing these workers in from other countries. What other sectors are involved of the economy?
So, you know, there may be some engineering jobs that will use these visa workers. You see them in the healthcare industry as well. Certain types of surgeons, for example, who specialize in types of surgeries that are so complicated that there are only a handful of surgeons who can perform them. You know, they may be brought into the U.S. for these jobs as well. So healthcare, manufacturing, engineering, but particularly the tech sector. And in Charlotte, a lot of the IT jobs that go to H-1B visa workers, not surprising, are going to the banking industry.
Mm-hmm. Are these visas, John Miano, being used the way they were intended to be used when these laws were first passed?
Well, I would have to say that we have to split this up into two ways, is that we have the statement of what publicly of what this program was supposed to do and what it was intended to do by the people who actually wrote the bill. Now, as far as the people who publicly stated that this was a system to bring in workers where there weren't Americans available, that the bill is a dismal failure. But the bill was written, and it was deliberately written so, to do what we see now, to replace Americans with cheap foreign workers. And for that purpose, the lobbyists who wrote the bill is meeting its purpose ideally.
I want to go back to something you just said. You're saying essentially that corporations wrote this bill, lobbyists for corporations wrote this bill so that they could rid themselves of American workers who have not only wages, higher wages, but also benefits, and bring in lower paid people from other parts of the world. Is that what we're saying here, Dr.
Yeah. I would take a little bit of an issue with just what's said. Clearly, I would not dispute that there might have been abuses to the bill, but I think a significant part of the bill is doing what it's supposed to be doing. I know very many people who are qualified, for example, at the universities that we don't pay for HB1 holders lower wages, and then we do hire people who are exceptionally qualified graduating from graduate school. So one of the things to follow up what Mike was asking earlier is, we are number one in creation innovation and then number one in higher education. So a lot of foreign students come to study in the U.S. and then when they graduate, that is a natural pipeline to go into the H-1B program. So there are a lot of good cases for that. I'm not denying that there are abuses, but to say that the program is a miserable failure, I don't think it's fair.
I don't think the numbers support the professor's statement here, in that under the system, the H-1B system has a skill-based prevailing wage system, in which the employer classifies the worker at one of four skill levels. Okay? The employers classified the majority of the workers at the lowest skill level, and 88% of the workers are classified at the lowest two skill levels, where the prevailing wage is at the 35th percentile. By the time you get to the workers who the employers classify as average, you're only down to 12%. So very few of the workers here are exceptional under the H-1B program. Only 6% are classified at the highest skill level.
It's been 26 years since this law went into effect. Have the shortages that were alarming 26 years ago, alarming enough to have legislation drawn up, drafted, and voted on and signed, have those shortages dried up and been replaced by other shortages? Or are we still facing shortages in the same technology sectors or the same economic sectors?
So I've got some statistics on that. So some people in the tech industry and job recruiters as well, say that there is a skills gap, and they point to some numbers. So Code.org, which is a nonprofit that focuses on more computer science education in schools, they say that North Carolina has 19,565 open computing jobs right now.
Wow.
But in 2014, had only 1,224 computer science graduates. So those are some of the numbers that are cited to support this argument that there's a skills gap. On the other hand, you have workers who right now have 20, 30 or more years in tech, American workers, who are being laid off by companies. And then
including your own.
Including my parent company. And those workers are being replaced by outsourcing firms who provide the same technology services, but they largely provide those services with H-1B visa workers who in many cases work for lower wages than the American workers would have accepted. And I think part of the shortage is being driven by maybe some people don't want to go into computer technology anymore. Maybe they don't want to go into tech. And this, I'm just theorizing here on the fly. But, do they want to go into an industry where they may be laid off in a few years and replaced by a visa worker? I don't know. But if I'm reading that and I'm hearing that and I'm thinking about going into computer science, I may take a long, hard look at whether that is a stable industry to be in.
Dr. Cho, you train the next generation at UNC Charlotte. Is that a topic of conversation among students?
Yes, absolutely. When you look at the numbers in the dot-com bubble, sort of crashed in the early 2000s,
right,
we see a nationally, over 50% plunge in enrollment in computer science.
So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
But that's exactly the kinds of sentiment that my friend here has echoed. However, that has completely recovered now. We are back to almost as high as the 1990s high of the enrollment level. Mm. So if you look at marketplace as an indicator on how people's sentiment go as far as the future of job prospects, right now you look at the numbers, you say, that's pretty good. People don't have that kind of fear.
Former Congressman Bruce Morrison, the principal author of this 1990 law that created these H-1B visas, is now a critic, and he lobbies against loopholes in the program. John Miano, why does he do that? Why is he critical of it?
My understanding is Bruce Morrison actually lobbies on both sides of this issue, depending on who he's on. That for the IEEE USA, he's against it, and for the hospital industry, he's all for it. So I think that this is the typical, you know, Washington thing where they create a convoluted system, and then you retire and you go lobbying to make money off of what you created.
Is this the kind of thing that's always in flux, these shortages? Did the shortages pop up? Is it like whack-a-mole where we see a shortage, we fix that with H-1B visa people and work on fixing the shortage, and then we fix the shortage and then something else is shorted, so we have to have another group of people? Or is this a long-term trend in certain economic sectors like IT?
Well, these shortages have been predicted for years and have never really come back. I would recommend Dr. Michael Teitelbaum's book, Falling Behind, that describes the scares that have been raised about the shortages, you know, going back to the Sputnik era, and they never come back. And, you know, one of the examples that Dan raised is that the industry lobbyists, they'll say there's so many computer jobs that only so many computer science graduates. But in reality, most computer workers do not have degrees in computer science. Like, they're people like me, and when I worked in computers, I had a degree in mathematics. We had people in engineering. We even had people with history degrees who worked in computers. So if you only measure the supply by computer science graduates, you can create a shortage out of thin air.
I should mention that, yes, you were, in fact, in the computer industry and saw it as a dead end because people were being laid off and became an attorney. So you have firsthand knowledge of what's going on, at least in the in information technology sector of the economy.
Right. I worked in companies as they were replacing Americans with H-1B workers. For example, I was a consultant at AIG, which was the first company to replace hundreds of Americans with foreign workers. I actually came afterwards as part of the cleanup crew, and it turned out to be a disaster. And as I was working through, I'm watching all these people around me being replaced. In fact, I worked with a guy who was being replaced for the second time by H-1B workers. And when that scholarship to law school came around, it looked pretty good at that time.
We hear a lot of people railing against outsourcing, shipping jobs offshore to India and other places around the world. This is the same thing, but what we're doing is bringing people in to do the jobs that Americans used to do, correct?
I would inject that it's actually the same thing, because the largest users of the H-1B program by far are the foreign offshoring companies, and what they do is they use the H-1B workers to provide the on-site support, and then they move the rest of the jobs overseas. And in fact, when I was in the business, we would use the general model of six people offshore for every person we brought in. Hmm. So each H-1B worker represents even more jobs being sent overseas.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more on the H-1B visa workers and what they're doing and where they're coming from and how long they can stay, etc. in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mecklenburg County Solid Waste. Through curbside recycling of plastics, paper, boxes, and cans, the community saves energy, money, and resources. Together, we can wipe out waste. WipeOutWaste.com. CMPD Chief Kerr Putney has been on his job for about a year now, and in that time, The department has grappled with a high-profile trial, an uptick in crime, and more. And he's been given the go-ahead now to hire more officers, but only half the number he asked for. So Chief Putney reflects on his first year at the top and talks about the future in the first part of our program tomorrow. And then we get an update on where we stand with the I-77 toll lane project, all tomorrow morning beginning at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Donald Trump enters the general election campaign with one of the largest financial disadvantages of any party nominee in recent history. This week, he fired his campaign manager, and many prominent Republicans don't support him. The challenges facing the Trump campaign.
That's the topic of the Diane Rehm Show, ahead from 10 to noon on listener-supported public radio, 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the H-1B visa program, which allows companies to bring in skilled workers to do jobs that they say Americans, they can't find American workers who have the same skills. There is some dispute about whether that's true or not, and we're talking to several people about that. Dion Roberts has been writing about this as the banking reporter for the Charlotte Observer. He's with us in our studio along with Dr. Bill Chu, professor of software and information systems at UNC Charlotte. The IT industry is one of the key industries where these workers are involved. And John Miano is co-author of a book called Sold Out, How High-Tech Billionaires and Partisan Beltway Crap Weasels Are Screwing America's Best and Brightest Workers. How long do H-1B visas last? In other words, if you have an H-1B visa and you're brought into the country to work, how long can you stay here and work on that visa, Dion?
I might let John answer this question. I know that it's it can be renewed for a number of times, but John, is it 3 years?
Each visa is good for 3 years. It can be renewed once. And then if you're in the final stages of a green card application, it can be renewed annually until you get the green card, which is another issue in itself.
And kind of piggybacking on some things that you talked about in the first segment, John, you say that the worker shortage used, and these are your words, the worker shortage used to justify H-1B is a complete fraud. Those are some pretty big words.
Yep. I'd say there's a whole industry designed to produce the shortage. And in fact, the shortage that kind of spurred this was actually came out of the National Science Foundation, where they produced draft reports claiming there'd be a huge shortage, and they circulated them for political purposes, but never officially released them. So they had deniability because they could say, oh, yeah, we're not really predicting the shortage, but they put them out there so people would think there's a shortage.
But Dion just told us there are 19,000 jobs waiting for somebody to fill them in North Carolina alone.
Well, first of all, I mean that comes from industry statistics. You can say you ask a company how many unfilled jobs, you can say any number. That's like going to my backyard and saying how many diamonds aren't in the hole in my backyard. Any number, you can pick out any number you want. And then they're comparing that shortage to the number of computer science graduates, the number of jobs, the number of computer science graduates, not the entire pool of potential workers in the field.
From my experience, I've talked to many people. I don't have statistics. That's not my job to keep statistics. But I think the shortage is real. They are not finding people that companies are not finding people that they're willing to pay prevailing wage for. So So I know many cases that is true, and also know from personal experience that my students graduated and get paid hundreds of, you know, over a six-figure salaries for doing IT and get H-1B visas. And there's no indication that those were cases taking away jobs from Americans.
Because, John, you also say that the only evidence that exists of a shortage is that people say it does.
Yeah, that's it. And I mean, for example, I'll give you the flip side. For example, I just filed a complaint in the U.S. District Court here in Washington, which involves what the clients are American workers in the industry. And as part of the complaint, I had to go through all their job applications. And these are people with experienced jobs who are filing 20 job applications a week in computers and not being able to get taking years to find jobs.
I know that authors oftentimes are not responsible for the final titles of their books. The publisher decides that in many cases because they want to sell books. But the use of the word crap weasels in the title of the book.
I will give 100% credit to Michelle Malkin on that one.
Well, I was going to ask you, do either of you have an axe to grind on this? Because that's a pejorative word, it seems to me, and that may raise some red flags for some folks.
You know, if you read the book, I think you'll be very, very shocked at the depth of the corruption going on here. I mean, what has happened here in Washington is that in the old days, the lobbyists went to Congress and told them to we want something in a bill. Now, the lobbyists write the bill and give it to Congress and tell them to pass the bill. And I'll give you a statistic example. In 1952, Congress said we need to create a new immigration system from scratch. That immigration system, the bill creating the immigration system that we have today, was 120 pages long. Okay, 2 years ago, we had a bill that was so-called comprehensive immigration reform. I mean, the bill was a total joke, but that bill was 1,198 pages. That wasn't starting over from scratch. That was 1,198 pages on top of the 120 pages on top of the 60 years of bills. It doesn't take 1,198 pages to reform a system created in 120 pages.
As you've talked, Dion, to people about this in Charlotte, is the reason that most companies use H-1B visa workers because they can't find skilled American workers, or is it because they can pay them less?
It depends on, I guess, who you're speaking to. So from the company standpoint, there's a shortage, and we need to bring these skilled workers.
Well, what's going on at McClatchy? Because McClatchy is doing this. I mean, that's your parent company, the owner of all these newspapers.
Correct. So McClatchy is in the process of laying off about 121, I think, is the exact number of its tech staff. Now, that's a portion of its IT staff. That's not all of it. Some of those workers are in Charlotte, and a lot of that work is going to be outsourced to an Indian-based company called Wipro, and Wipro will, you know, perform those services for the Observer. So,
is this for your website, charlotteobserver.com, or is this for some other IT endeavor?
So the work that's being outsourced, my understanding is the work that's being outsourced to the Indian company is a lot of the help desk stuff. So, you know, my computer's not working this morning. You file a support ticket. You may get a call from someone from India once this takes effect.
So these are jobs that will be held in India?
Yes.
So these are not H-1B visa workers because they're in India, right?
Right. But some of the work that is being outsourced is going to be outsourced to a company that Wipro contracts with in America, and those workers will be H-1B workers.
And they'll actually come and physically touch the computers.
I think some of these workers will be in our office from time to time.
So what message does that send, Dr. Cho, to you and to the students that you educate in this field?
Well, this kind of message was very loud and clear in the dot-com bubble burst stage. So that's why the computer science enrollment nationally dipped more than 50%. Mm-hmm. But today, this message doesn't seem to be concerning people because we have record enrollments in the computing fields.
Yes, but record enrollments does not equate to jobs after graduation if companies are going to do what McClatchy and many other companies
are doing.
But
so far, that has not happened in our graduates. Our graduates are well sought after. People are chasing after our graduates. Companies are chasing after our graduates, so all the students most of the students that are all the students that are really, really good have no trouble finding jobs. They have multiple offers.
Dion.
So, you know, since our coverage of this issue has been, you know, out there, I've received emails from dozens of people in Charlotte and across the country who, you know, thanked us for doing the story, but also shared personal stories of their own experiences. Just last night, you know, this woman wrote me an email saying that her husband has had to, she and her husband and their family, they have kids, they've had to leave North Carolina twice since 2003 to go to a different state so that this, her husband can find a job in tech. Mm-hmm. And he's got 30 plus years experience. They can't come back to North Carolina, although they would love to because they love living here. But they've got children in college and they've got a mortgage, and he can't find tech work in North Carolina. So they've got to do what they've got to do.
Dr. Chu, you say that you don't believe that abuse of H-1B is as great as it was in the early 2000s, but you know of companies with hiring freezes who still use H-1B visa.
That's
folks.
Correct. That
what
correct.
Does that tell you?
Well, that tells me that there are, you know, so I would thank again for the investigative journalism that my friend is doing here. So that is clearly an issue that needs to be brought to the discussion and be discussed about. We have to be vigilant. However, I just wanted to, you know, sort of put a balance on it, whether that's a complete flawed. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that statement.
The use of these visas apparently is on the rise, and I think I got this information from you in one of your articles in the Charlotte Observer, Dion, that it's up 25% nationwide, and in Charlotte it is up 39% in 1 year. You report that last year hundreds of employers filed initial applications for more than 16,500 H-1B workers in Charlotte, many in technology positions, bigger than the entire workforce of some of the city's largest employers. What is driving that? Is this a genuine shortage?
Well, so one thing you have to understand about the way the visa process works is it's a multi-part process. And so there are initial applications that you file to get the visas. And when your initial application is approved, you can then move on to filing what they call an H-1B petition, which is basically where you go to another government agency and you say, okay, my initial application was approved to hire a worker in Charlotte, for example. Now I want to move forward with actually bringing that worker here. And that's called an H-1B petition. To get the petition, there's a cap on the number of visas that are awarded annually. And the cap is 85,000. And there's a lottery system because there's so much demand when the visas are awarded around April every year. There's so much demand for these visas that they have to have a randomized, computerized lottery. And so I think part of the big increase in initial applications is people are trying to game the lottery system. So I think it does reflect
people who would those people
companies.
Be?
Companies are trying to increase their odds of winning visas through the lottery.
What's their motivation for that?
Because they want these workers. Because they say that there's a shortage of skilled tech talent. But as I've said before, on the other hand, people point to layoffs of Americans. They point to another point I didn't bring up is wages have been flat, according to experts, for American IT workers for 15 to 20 years.
Is that because they can replace them with lower wages?
That's the argument. So where is Adam Smith's invisible hand? If there is a shortage, you would think wages would be going through the roof.
I don't know the statistics, but the anecdotal evidence I get from my students is wages are way up. You know, the graduates that I see today, what they're getting compared to 10 years ago.
Is that over? I'm wondering, is that overall
I don't know
IT
about
or
overall.
Is that special?
I don't know. But just what I'm seeing from my vantage point, I do not see a flat line. I actually see a tremendous increase.
In one of your articles that you've written about this, Dion, you spoke with an anonymous employee in the technology area at Bank of America who told you that he didn't know of any American developers that had worked with over the last couple of years because they're all Indian. No Americans, they're all Indian. Have you been able to verify that?
So you know, this worker we promised anonymity to because this individual, you know, is worried about reprisals from Bank of America. So, you know, we confirmed as best we could by talking to this individual. This individual works directly with Indian workers. So this is this person's direct experience. So
is this unusual, John, from your experience in talking to companies all over the country?
No. And let me just take one step back. And one of the increase in the number of workers here, and that is because we say H-1B, we should also take into account that there are all these other programs. When the H-1B program was created in 1990, there were only two guest worker programs that existed, H-1 and H-2. Now we have H-1B, we have TN visas, we have J visas, we have what's called the OPT program, we have trade visitor visas, L-2 visas, all of which can be used for the same purpose, which are also part of the increase. For simplicity, we can just call it the H-1B program, but there are a whole slew of other visas that people can use to come into the United States.
And one of the things that you've talked about, I believe, John, I believe it was you, is that one of the reasons this isn't talked about is because the media doesn't talk about it very much.
No, it doesn't. For example, when this first started happening in 1994, when I got on board following this, it caused a great media buzz. It got lots of coverage, and then it immediately died out. And I've been following this issue for 22 years, and we started writing this book. No one was talking about it. It was kind of fortuitous that the Disney and Southern California Edison cases got some publicity. But I need to point out here that when the Orlando Sentinel wrote about the Disney layoffs, they didn't mention they were being replaced by foreign workers at all. They reported on the layoffs, and they didn't mention H-1B workers from India taking the jobs. It was Patrick Thibodeau at Computer World who has been relentless over these past 22 years reporting on it. And then finally, after 6 months, the New York Times picked up on the Disney story, and then it got out again, and now we see the coverage of H-1B taking place.
You mentioned Disney. It's happened at Toys R Us. It's happened at Disney World, I believe. Were the jobs being replaced at Disney World computer jobs, information technology jobs?
They were computer jobs, 320 people. And you sit there and say, if there's a shortage of workers, how was Disney able to get rid of the 320 computer programmers they had and be able to get replacements for them? And I mean, I could go on here for hours listing companies that have done the same thing.
We're going to talk about some of the more troubling aspects of this in a few minutes, and that has to do with the people who are being laid off training the people that they're bringing in. You also, in a very troubling aspect of one of the reports you wrote, Dion, you were told that some of the positions being filled by H-1B workers here in Charlotte require only basic computer skills, and that many times seasoned workers were training the people supposedly who were skilled workers to take these jobs, training them on some very basic skills, which what allows these workers to qualify for these H-1B visas if they have to be trained on basic computer skills?
Well, that's the argument against the, you know, widespread use of the program.
You might, if I interject here, is that all it takes to qualify for an H-1B visa is a mail order or college degree from an Indian diploma mill.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we come back. We have a break coming up in 30 seconds, and we can't get into that just before the break. But what you're alleging here is pretty concerning, that you can just get a basic degree from a diploma mill school in India and come here on an H-1B visa and replace an American worker. We'll talk about that when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Novant Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, providing comprehensive services and customized treatment plans. More at novanthealth.org/ orthopedics. Donald Trump enters the general election campaign with one of the largest financial disadvantages of any party nominee in recent history. This week, he fired his campaign manager, and many prominent Republicans don't support him. So, on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, guest host Tom Jelton and a panel of guests talk about the challenges facing the Trump campaign. That's all upcoming. If you'd like to join our conversation right now, you can do so at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for us on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
This week on Morning Edition, as the UK votes on whether to leave the European Union, we'll hear from people on both sides of the debate.
I've been skeptical of it for some years, and that skepticism has now morphed into outright opposition.
Whilst I'm very proud to be British, I also feel as though I can say that I'm proud to be European too.
Plus, we continue to travel around America talking to voters. This week, we bring you The View from Providence, Rhode Island. Listen every weekday morning.
Catch Morning Edition from 5 until 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the H-1B visa program, which allows foreign workers to come in to this country who allegedly have superior and needed skills, skills that are absent in the American workforce. Dion Roberts is a banking reporter who's written about this in the pages of the Charlotte Observer. Dr. Bill Chu, professor of software and information systems at UNC Charlotte, has firsthand experience with graduating young people into this profession. And Joe Miano is the co-author with Michelle Malkin of Sold Out, How High-Tech Billionaires and Partisan Beltway Crap Weasels Are Screwing America's Best and Brightest Workers. One of the things that just came up in this conversation is the fact that a lot of the people who allegedly qualify who qualify for these H-1B visas are allegedly graduates, not really graduates. They've gone through some Indian diploma mill organization to get their certification that tells American companies that they're qualified. Does this really happen, Dr. Cho?
Well,
Is this really a problem? And do American companies know this and don't care because it's all about the bottom line?
I don't know about Indian diploma schools, so I mail order diploma mills. I don't know how to comment on that. But I do know from personal experience that I have talked to several students that are on potential students that are on H-1B visa in the Charlotte area. They wanted to come to UNC Charlotte to pursue a graduate degree, and some of them were poorly qualified.
What about the article that Dion wrote in which he spoke to some anonymous employee at Bank of America, where he basically said that the people at Bank of America are training, and not just Bank of America, this is happening elsewhere too, are training people to take their jobs who have very basic computer skills. Do you find that believable?
It could happen in some cases.
John?
I would say that I worked with H-1B workers for a long time, and the very best among them, the very, very best among them were average, that most of them had absolutely no computer skill whatsoever. But they were $10 an hour cheaper.
Well, if these people are being trained by American workers who are then being laid off, and these American workers in some cases know that they're going to be laid off when they finish training these replacement people on H-1B visas, why haven't we heard a hue and cry among displaced American workers, Dion?
Well, the reason is that there are a couple of reasons there. Number one is if you're still young and you've got bills to pay and a family and you've still got working years ahead of you, you'll be blackballed, basically blacklisted from the industry, from the tech industry, as a whistleblower. The other thing here.
Aren't there laws in place to protect you from that?
Well, there are, but I mean,
you're a troublemaker.
You're a troublemaker. Yeah. And the other piece of this too is in some cases, companies are requiring laid off Americans to sign, non-disparagement agreements in which they, allegedly would not get their severance if they were to speak ill about the company or the fact that they were humiliated by training their H-1B replacement. And so, who wants to be laid off and then not get severance?
But I would add, I worked with a guy who in 1994 got laid off by AIG like this, being replaced by a foreign worker. He was very vocal. You could see evidence of him at the time. And then absolutely nothing happened. And then when he got H-1B the second time, he didn't want to say anything because he'd been doing this for years and Congress did nothing, the media did nothing. It was just great frustration for them.
But anecdotally, you would think that this would be seeping out, even if people have to remain anonymous. You have such a critical mass of people who have allegedly been laid off and replaced by these H-1B visa workers that you would think that we would hear more about this.
There was a big outcry during the dot-com bubble bursting years that the conversation mirroring what we're having today. So there was an outcry. I think there is a group within the IEEE organization actually made some waves, political waves, but it sort of died out in the intervening years.
If this is really happening, and we'll, for the purpose of this conversation at this moment, we'll say that it is. If this is really happening, is it happening legally? Are these loopholes in the law that allow this to happen, intentional or otherwise?
It's absolutely deliberate, and that's why I say this is part of the program. And just to go back 1 second, your thing, like when Cargill did this, replaced several hundred Americans, it shows up in a local newspaper in Minnesota and then doesn't get spread. But as far as your second question, is it perfectly legal? Absolutely, and this is why I say this program is working absolutely the way it was intended. After all this. This is a story that's recounted in detail and sold out. It's so unbelievable, which is worth buying the book or getting it from the library itself. In 1998, after all this abuse started coming out, and we were at the Y2K time, industry was calling for more H-1B visas. So the House Judiciary Committee passed a bill that increased the number of H-1B visas, but included a provision to ban replacing Americans with foreign workers. That's 1998, H.R. 3736 from the 105th Congress. When that bill left the committee, the Republican leadership in the House allowed industry lobbyists to rewrite the bill, and the bill that was voted on was a 42-page bill to me, as compared to the 21-page bill passed by the committee that allowed replacing Americans with foreign workers.
So what I'm hearing you say is when you say that this bill, this H-1B visa bill that allowed these visas to be issued, is working exactly the way it was intended to work, your words, is you're saying it was intended to permit companies to lay off high-paid American workers and replace them with lower-paid foreign workers. That's what you're saying.
And you should point out here that one of the prime drivers of this was actually the bar, because remember that when these workers are being replaced, lawyers are collecting fees on all these visa applications, and so if these companies aren't replacing Americans with foreign workers, they're not getting visas, and lawyers aren't getting their fees.
Yeah, I've read that. The primary function of H-1B is to generate fees for immigration lawyers. You said.
Yeah.
As you've investigated this, and I know that you're not – this is one story that you've written or a couple of stories, and you focus on lots of different things, Dion, but have you found evidence of that?
So I can't – my reporting does not, confirm some of the things that John just shared. I will say, getting back to the wage issue, which I think is an important piece of this, I spoke with about more than half a dozen H-1B visa workers for this story as they caught buses into uptown Charlotte on South Tryon Street. Mm-hmm. And one woman from northern India told me that basically, she can earn about twice as much in Charlotte as she can back in India. And so that was a huge draw for her to come here.
But that would be normal whether they were making minimum wage or whether they were making six figures. It would be normal, right?
For them to make more in the U.S.? Sure. I mean, the wages here would definitely be higher than in India. But, that's a factor here, going back to some of the things that Dr. Chu was saying. That's a factor in companies' reliance on the program, I think, is because it does allow them to cut some of their overhead costs.
Both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders agree on this issue. They say they both want companies to have to raise H-1B visa workers' wages. Would raising those wages, mandatorily raising those wages, have an impact on the number of people we're bringing in on H-1B visas?
Oh, absolutely. I said very few. It's just requiring that the workers are paid the prevailing wage, the average wage, would eliminate almost every H-1B worker.
Several people have been emailing us or Facebooking and commenting on this as we've been talking. Peggy emails, do H-1B workers pay the same taxes as regular workers? And if so, are they eligible for Social Security benefits and, if needed, food stamps? Are they?
Yes, they pay the same taxes, and no, they're not currently eligible for Social Security. However, India has been negotiating an agreement to allow their workers to get Social Security.
So that's another cost savings, is it not, for employers? If you don't have to pay into the Social Security
Pay the taxes.
They do.
They just don't get the benefit.
Okay. Alan emails, the concerns of the free market wage issues are addressed in the statute and regulations. Prevailing wage is dictated by U.S. Department of Labor, but what we have seen recently with allegedly with Disney, is large U.S. employers calling the job entry level, getting large numbers of H-1B workers, and asking the replaced and laid off U.S. workers to train the younger, cheaper foreign workers, or else. And there are stories, I believe, John, you've talked about this, and I think, Dion, maybe you've talked about this as well.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I have a maybe different perspective on this is that, you see, my perspective comes from actually reading the statutes, what's actually in the bill, you know, not what the spin is, what is actually in the bill. And related to this, in 2004, Congress changed the law to allow employers to pay H-1B workers ridiculously low salaries. That if you look at the top, very top of the H-1B statute, USC 1182N, it says the H-1B workers has to be paid the prevailing wage. Now, if you go down about 30 pages, if you print it out, at Section P, it redefines what the prevailing wage is for H-1B. And what Congress allowed them to change the law to make the prevailing wage so that the employer picks one of four skill levels, and the skill levels correspond to a percentile wage. So the lowest skill level is equivalent to the 17th percentile, the second is the 34th percentile, next comes the average wage, and then the 67th percentile. And so what the employers just do is they classify most of these people at the lowest skill level where they can pay the 17th percentile, thus allowing them to pay a great discount in wages.
You also point out that in 1998, Congress explicitly made it legal to replace Americans with H-1B workers in nearly all cases. What was the motivation for that? Why hasn't this been more widely publicized?
Well, that's one of the great shocks. I said that this is one of the stories of the book, and that's what I described, that was where the bill was, where the Republican leadership in the House replaced the bill passed by the committee with one written by lobbyists. And the bill passed by the committee clearly said you can't replace Americans with foreign workers. The bill that the lobbyists wrote said you can't replace Americans unless this bizarre set of circumstances occurs that will never happen.
Dion, you also report something specific to North Carolina in your stories on all of this. North Carolina taxpayers, you say, are helping to foot the bill for these companies bringing in H-1B visa workers. How so?
So North Carolina, you know, from time to time awards state incentives to companies that expand in the state or, you know, come here and set up shop. And in some cases, some of those companies rely on H-1B visa workers. And so what critics say is taxpayers in those instances are subsidizing these outsourcing companies that may not be hiring North Carolinians for these same jobs that we're giving them incentives to create here.
So in other words, these companies have been given incentives to create jobs in North Carolina, but there's no parameter placed on who gets to fill those jobs. So they've created the 350 jobs that they promised to create, but they're giving them to H-1B visa workers, not to Americans, not to North Carolinians.
The way the North Carolina law that, you know, governs incentives is written, it does not prohibit companies from using visa workers.
Is that deliberate, or is that simply an oversight in the way the law was written?
So I don't know how old the state incentives law is, my instincts tell me that it was written before the H-1B visa program came around. I would imagine North Carolina has been giving incentives, you know, going back to the 80s, 70s, 60s, maybe. But, you know, since our reporting has come out, you know, state lawmakers have said that they are now scrutinizing that loophole, if you want to call it that, in state law, and who knows, they may move to change it. I don't think that'll happen in this session of the legislature, which appears to be coming to a close, but maybe in the long session next year.
And in your book, John, you make another troubling allegation when it comes to the purported shortage of talented, educated graduates and workers in science and technology. There has been a major push in education towards STEM education to eventually fill all these jobs that we know we haven't got skilled workers because we haven't given them STEM education. But the Census Bureau reported in 2014, 74% of those who have bachelor's degree in science, technology, engineering, math, STEM, are not employed in STEM occupations. Why not?
Because there just aren't jobs for them.
Why not?
For example, in engineering, the number of engineering jobs in this country is declining. Walmart did a survey of their cashiers and found they had over 1,000 technology workers working as cashiers.
And that's because those technology workers have been replaced by H-1B visa workers?
Because they can't find jobs for various reasons. They could be replaced by workers. They could be, you know, just general laid off. But you know, if you're a tech worker and you're laid off, you're not going to starve. You're going to go and work in Walmart or work in Home Depot or do something to put money on the table.
Well, one issue here, I think, might be that tech workers, if they aren't refreshing their skills continuously, they may basically make themselves unmarketable, unemployable. You think about the speed at which technology changes today. Apple puts out a new product. Suddenly, there's a huge need for companies to understand how that product works and to make sure that they have tech staff who can write code around it.
Well, in 20 seconds, why do we have to go outside the country for something that Apple has developed?
That's a question for our colleges and universities and a question for companies as to why they aren't training their own employees, bringing them up to speed on these new technologies as opposed to bringing in foreign labor.
And that with that, we have to stop. Interesting conversation, an interesting conundrum. That was Dion Roberts, banking reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Dr. Bill Chu with us, professor of software and information systems at UNC Charlotte, and John Miano, co-author of Sold Out, How High-Tech Billionaires and Partisan Beltway Crap Weasels Are Screwing America's Best and Brightest Workers. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7